Welcome to the Entertainment Engine.
Welcome to Season 2 of the Entertainment Engine podcast. I'm Pete Moore.
And I'm Bex Gregory. This podcast was created by our company, Seamless Entertainment. We're providing in-depth advice and information for creatives pursuing a career in the entertainment industry.
It's a great passion of ours, and we're looking forward to sharing our knowledge with you all.
Each week, we'll be bringing our listeners some great entertainment facts and news, mixed in with special guest interviews from seasoned professionals who share their insight and experience of the business.
You can listen and subscribe to the podcast on all streaming platforms so you never miss an episode. And what a bonus, it's totally free.
And now it's time for part two of our conversation with Ross King. The Scottish television presenter, actor and writer, best known for being the LA correspondent for ITV breakfast programmes Lorraine and Good Morning Britain. In 2018 New Year Honours, Ross was appointed MBE for services in broadcasting, the arts and charity. Ross has interviewed some of the biggest stars in show business. Here's part two of the conversation we had with Ross. Ross, with your relaxed and informal style, you know, this has resulted in some of the best interviews with many of the world's biggest stars, including Tom Cruise, Beyonce, George Clooney, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Michael Douglas, Clint Eastwood, Brad Pitt, Tom Hanks, plus fellow Scots, of course, Sean Connery and Gerard Butler, just to name a few. I mean, Ross, who was the most inspiring interview that you've ever achieved? Oh, and have you ever had any sort of awkward interviews, ones that maybe didn't quite go to plan, or any funny moments you remember?
Well, the ones that never quite go according to plan are with Gerard Butler, because we've been mates for such a long time. And we tend to always make it the end of the day. So, right. Especially if it's like a junket thing and he's had to do a lot of interviews, we make mine the last one, because it will go on, and then it ends up with us trying to make each other laugh or just trying to say awkward things to each other. You know, it'll be like me saying, Jerry, a lot of people say to me, can you recommend a scary movie? And I always say, anything with you trying to do an accent. So we do all that, and then, you know, we just put each other off, which is good, which is really good fun. So that's always good. In terms of the stars that I love to interview, again, it is a little bit like the bigger the star, the nicer they are. You know, George Clooney is just brilliant because he gets it and he knows, you know, I think people like that love it if you lob the ball to them in the way that you go, you know. I think that I used to do for just a laugh was that, you know, be like, say with George Clooney, you would say, so George, you know, there you are, here's another hit movie, you've been voted sexiest man alive twice, you know, you've got, you know, your lovely wife Amal, you've got the twins now, but are you happy, you know? And he'd be like, you know, and he would go, well, Ross, you know, I'm just you know, it's a struggle to get out of bed each day, and you know, you have a laugh with it. And then other people you could ask that to, and they'd be like, yeah, that's a good question. Well, you know, happiness is, it can mean many and vary. You go, it's a joke, you know. I love ones like that. They get it. Julia Roberts, I love interviewing because she's really feisty and she doesn't take, you know, prisoners, and she doesn't, you know, she does not suffer fools gladly. So you've got to be on your A game. But she's great, you know, and I really love interviewing her. And there's a lot of, just a lot of, you know, people like that that are good fun. And I like a little bit of a test in an interview as well. I like it when they come back at you, if they do. And I've been really lucky. I haven't had, you know, it was interesting when I was, as I said, I was interviewing lovely Alan Kim from the movie Minari. And he's eight. And, you know, you're doing an interview, but you've got to remember, he's, even though he's in a movie and he's like a big movie star in it, he's eight. And so you end up starting to think, and this is the weird thing we're talking about, how when you goes back to when you wrote, you know, stuff that you've done in the past, was that in pantomimes at the end, when it's the song sheet, and you've got the kids up. So the interviewing kids there, always taught you never to ask a kid a question that they could just answer with yes or no, because you would just get a whole yes, no, yes, yeah, no, no. Yeah. So, you know, again, with Alan, it was funny. I was thinking like that. I was thinking, don't ask him a question, you know, ask him, you know, how he felt when he got the award or what he's thinking about. You know, it's so funny that you just want different things, and you've got to pull upon every experience that you've got.
Yeah. Yeah, because kids can be so unpredictable. Oh. You don't know what they're going to say next, you know.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And also as well, Ross, do you think because of your, you know, relaxed and sort of just, you know, nice and cool style, do the stars just come up to you and want to just talk to you anyway? So do they bypass other people to say, actually, I'm going to talk to Ross King now, so you can wait?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I do remember being on a red carpet once, and Claire Foy, the wonderful actress who, of course, played Queen in The Crown, was coming along, and there was a whole sort of cluster of British people waiting to and wanting to do an interview with her. And she came, and she actually was so lovely and gracious and kind of bounded across and was like, Ross! I was like, Claire! And she gave me this big hug. And I remember the guy from the BBC beside me going, oh, you know, even the Queen comes across and gives him a hug. How do we compete? So that was nice. That was a lovely moment.
That all goes back to your upbringing, Ross, I think. That goes back to who you are and just the person you are, I think, really, to be honest with you.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Well,
I think so.
I've been lucky that what you see on TV, if you do see me on TV, is what you get. You know, I'm lucky that it's not, you know, I have a lot of friends, a lot of comedians, and, you know, they can be very sort of quiet and dark and different people off stage to the way that they are on stage. Mm. And I think I've just been really fortunate that, yeah, what you see is what you get. So it's not a struggle.
No. And is there, I mean, with everyone that you've spoken to, interviewed, and is there anyone on your bucket list that you really want to do the interview with you haven't managed yet? Is it that person you think? Anyone?
No, do you know what? I do feel very fortunate. You know, even when I look, you know, I've interviewed prime ministers, presidents. I think Barbara Streisand was a huge one, because I fell in love with her when I was a kid going to the cinema. But then I got to interview her twice in the space of like a couple of weeks. It was just
It
was the most incredible experience to do that. So there's nobody really that I can think of that I think I would love to. I mean, the one interview probably is the one that everyone would want that no one will ever get, which is the Queen. You know, I feel that in my little, I mean, I've been lucky to have met her twice. Now, I met her when I did a gig in Hyde Park, which was just amazing. And she was really far back. And at the end of the show, when I met her and I said, you know, Mom, did you enjoy the show? And she said, I was so far back, I could have stayed at home and opened a window. which was brilliant. And then when I got an MBE from her at Holyrood, again, she was just so funny. You know, she was just like, you know, she said, you've come a long way. And I said, in my career or just today, Ma? And she was like, both. So, you know, she, you know, so again, you know, when you have little interaction with her, and then, you know, I speak to other people who have, you know, sat at lunches with us and had longer conversations, you know, you would love to do it. I mean, even to do an interview with her, but not for it to ever be broadcast. You know, just to sit and talk through things, and, you know, the incredible service that she's given to the country, whether you're a royalist or not, I think you've got to look at this woman who has gone through so much at such an early age, and, you know, not expected to be queen so young. And, you know, it's phenomenal.
No, I think so. I mean, you never know, Ross. It might happen.
Yeah, she might just make that call. She'll go, look, if Meghan and Harry did it, get Ross over.
We won't go down that road, but I just think we won't go down that road. But that's another interesting, but I think the Queen has held herself fantastically well over the years.
Yeah,
And just looking at the other side as well, Ross, because you can be seen daily, of course, in the UK and Europe on ITV's top rated morning shows like Good Morning Britain and Lorraine, which we absolutely love, as their US correspondent. And you've covered the Oscars, Tonys, Emmys, Golden Globes and the Grammys. In addition to all things Hollywood and show business, you also report the more harder news in the US, including terrorist attacks, mass shootings, wildfires and hurricanes. How do you find the switch of journalism from entertainment to the hard news? Do you find that's quite difficult?
No, I don't, because, again, luckily, as I mentioned earlier on, you know, being brought up in local radio and being given the task of doing different shows and doing different things and, you know, being involved in news. You know, my first, I was the Saturday boy at Radio Clyde, and that meant I worked in the newsroom and I worked in the sports shows and worked in news and did everything, you know, made the teas, coffees, ran in with the scripts, you know, everything. And then when you got on air, that you then had to cover lots of things. So it's that really simple thing of, you know, different strokes for different folks, different styles. I mean, again, even if I'm doing American TV, you know, if I'm doing something for, say, like VH1 or whatever, it's a slightly different style to the way that I would do it for British TV. You know, even radio, I did America's Top 40 here, which is, again, a different radio style to what I would do for a radio show in Britain. And it's just being a broadcaster, you know, it very much in the true sense of the word broad. And yeah, I mean, I think what is nice now, and it didn't really happen before, is that everything was very much, oh, if you do that, you can't do that. You know, it'd be a bit like, you know, if you do theatre, you can't do films. And if you do films, you don't do TV. And if you do, you know, whereas now, you know, and I think a brilliant example of it is an old pal of mine, Bradley Walsh. And, I worked with Bradley, you know, when we were both a lot younger.
Yeah.
And I used to always say to Brad, you know, he could do everything. And I said, you know, it will come round that, you know, you will be allowed to do everything. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, Brad was very different. He was very alternative, you know, from a comic style.
Yeah. Great all-rounder,
And he's a good actor and he's a good singer and everything. And so, you know, again, it goes back to we were lucky. You know, I also where I think I was very lucky was that I was brought up in an era where I was allowed to do different things. I think it's a little bit harder now in terms of having the experience. Mm-hmm. But the great thing is there are a lot of opportunities now, as indeed I have had, you know, to do different things in American TV or to act. And it's good. You know, I always love the fact that I can go back and do things. I can go off and do, you know, a gig, an audience with type thing, or I can go back and do a little bit of a play, or I can do a musical again or whatever. So yeah, it's just, again, it's been so fortunate and so lucky to have been given those opportunities. And also I think, you know, there's a great American expression, you know, what's in your wheelhouse? Which always does make me laugh. But I think I'm lucky that in my wheelhouse to have a few wheels.
Absolutely.
And I think with your whole career as well, Ross, what would you say has been the most inspiring country you visited?
I think that obviously my heart will always be and home will always be Scotland. And I do find Scotland, you know, for such a small country, you know, what we have achieved is phenomenal. And I know it's kind of a bit like, you know, you read it on a tea towel, but you know, you think of everything from, you know, penicillin to Tarmacadam and the Rose to Dunlop with the tires and, you know, the phone, you know, and, you know, Alexander Graham Bell and John Logie Baird, the TV, all the rest of it. And wherever you go, you know, Scots travel. Wherever I always walk into a place, you know, it was even I was in Vegas last weekend working, and, you know, one of the guys that had been on the lighting crew was Scottish, and, you know, then he's gone on to do other things. And it's just, it's wonderful that you do find Scots every single week. You find them more around the world than you find them in Scotland. I often wonder who's left in Scotland.
I know. But
it's great. But I also love America. It's always had a great, I've had a great affinity with America because I think there's a wonderful can-do attitude here. It's not as great as it used to be, I would say, because there's more knocking now in America than there's ever been, which I never saw before. you know, here I love the fact that, you know, if, you know, in Britain, everyone loves someone to be X, you know, it's like X Radio 1 DJ, X Blue Peter presenter, X something. Whereas here, I love the fact that when you were the president, you were still always called Mr. President, even when you were no longer the president. You know, I thought, you know, that was a great thing. And it just showed how they really celebrated success. I don't think they celebrate success as much, but then again, you know, the tall poppy syndrome that we have in Britain and that we have in Australia, funnily enough, is, you know, you build someone up and then you knock them down. It's happening a little bit more here. But having said that, they love a comeback in America. It really is the land of comebacks. They like nothing better. Mm-hmm. But, I find America, you know, inspiring as well. But, you know, I've taken something from every place that I've gone to or worked, you know, whether it even be Switzerland, you know, just that lovely Swiss preciseness. You know, I don't think there's any place that I haven't been to that I haven't, you know, taken something from. Mm-hmm. I mean, even the Isle of Wight, take a lot from the Isle of Wight. used to go there on my holidays all the time. I love it.
Well, yeah. Funnily enough, I'm originally from the Isle of Wight, so I'm actually on the Isle of Wight right now.
Yes. One of my and it's funny when you're talking about like proud moments and all the rest of it. One of the proudest moments for me was when I was young doing the 8:15 from Manchester Saturday morning show in the BBC, and the Bembridge Air Show asked me to open the air show, and they flew me from Manchester to the airport, and I opened the air show. And we covered the 8:15 from Manchester. And then I went with my mum and dad for a walk down the high street. And in all the little shops that I had walked down as a kid, the fish and chip shop and the shop where I got my Airfix modelling kit from and all that. And I used to play tennis and ride at the Mead and at the Top Club as well. And it was incredible that there were posters in the thing saying that I was coming to open the Bembridge Air Show. And it was such a freaky, and my mum and dad and I, and my sister Elaine as well, it was just this weird, weird moment that, you know, I'd gone there and my Uncle Bill and my Aunt Molly, and my cousins Charles and Malcolm, and my cousin Malcolm, who's still on the island.
Wow, that's bizarre. And I remember going to all the air shows when I was really young, you know, with my parents, and the Red Arrows would come over, and it was amazing. So, yeah, for all I know, you might have even been there, you know.
I might have been there, but yeah. So the Isle of Wight. And I often talk about two things. I talk about we're definitely going to have a big family reunion there. We were possibly going to have it this year, but I don't think that'll happen now. And then, so maybe next year. And then also, you know what I have? There's a little bit of me which often thinks about, would I, you know, at some point move to the Isle of Wight and live in the Isle of Wight? I don't know. It's always been a little kind of fantasy of mine. And used to go to Sultan's Holiday Bungalows as well at Sea View. I know my Isle of Wight.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of people, you know, do come, you know, to the island that they love, you know, especially in the summer. It's really lovely over here. I mean, you've got the lovely coastal walks, the beaches, you know, you're just surrounded by it. But it's in the winter months, it's a little bit, you know, a little bit dull and a bit not the best, but it's a bit cold. But it's fun. That's such a small world, isn't it?
So do you think you would ever move back, Ross? Do you think you would do that?
Oh, never. Yeah, never say never again. I mean, I love it here. And, you know, America has been amazing to me.
Yeah.
And I've had the most phenomenal time. And, you know, initially when I came here, I didn't, you know, I think I would love to have said, yeah, I'll stay. But, you know, in reality, I thought maybe I'll just come out here for a year or two and have the experience. And, you know, here I am 21 years later thinking, oh my goodness me, I'm still here. It's been phenomenal. It has been phenomenal. But yeah, never say never again. You know, I still have thoughts of opening the little tea shop in Luss in Scotland. Yeah. And then also, again, funnily enough, with the Isle of Wight, I remember Mark King opened
I know Mark,
Is it still there? He had a place on the high street, as you go down the high street on the right-hand side.
He's not there anymore.
And have you ever attended the Isle of Wight Festival, Ross, as well? Have you ever come to that?
No, I've never. That's the one thing I missed out, because obviously it started sort of later after my holes had all sort of finished at Uncle Bill and Aunt Molly's. But I have so many fond memories. It's funny, you've just got me in my head. I'm thinking of the Isle of Wight, I'm thinking of the hovercrafts, and I'm thinking of every little bit of it, and the little hotels. And my Aunt Dolly used to play in the holiday. I used to sing in some of the holiday camps.
Because there was pontins on the island.
I remember all that so well. So it's just so many happy memories of the Isle of Wight. Love it.
Oh yeah, you'll have to come back one time.
Second home. Yeah.
Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. You have to come over, Ross. I'm going to have to treat you to a bit of lunch.
Yeah, I want to go for a Knickerbocker Glory.
Yes. Oh yeah. Sounds.
I want to have a game of putting, and then I want a Knickerbocker Glory.
Yeah, exactly. Crazy golf or something like that.
Crazy golf. Yeah.
That's right. And then I want to go on the boating lake at Ride.
That's it. Yeah. Oh
wow,
that's fantastic. Yeah, reminiscing.
Yeah.
And just get back to Ross, it was actually really interesting to look at Shari King's books entitled Breaking Hollywood and Taking Hollywood. Now what is your take on Hollywood today, and do you think there are opportunities for people to succeed in Hollywood, or would you say the doors are quite closed to the gatekeepers? What would you say on that side of things?
Well, just to explain, so Breaking Hollywood and Taking Hollywood were two sort of raunchy novels that I wrote with a lovely lady called Shari Lowe. So what had happened was that I'd been approached to, Shari approached me and said, would I like her to co-write my biography? And I said, it's a pamphlet. It's a leaflet that we can hand out to the family. And I said, you know, I've been very lucky. I've had a great life. There's no huge demons or anything like that. So there's nothing that will make the book that different. But I said, but what about if we wrote a novel together and I could put in, feature some stories that may have happened or may not have happened. And so she said, okay, let's try. And we sat one day and we wrote about 30,000 words together. And then we went to Macmillan and they took us right away on a two-book deal. It was very fast and very furious. And Jackie Collins, who had become a great mate of mine out here, was so lovely. She was the first person ever to read the first book, Taking Hollywood. And was such a great help and an advisor and just a wonderful mentor, and very kindly wrote like the preface and the little press stuff for it. And she was great. I remember giving her the first book and I said, look, Shari, you know, I know you want to do a little press bit on it, but my caveat is that if you don't like it, you don't have to say anything. And she was like, oh, darling, it's not a problem. She said, I can just say it's crap, but buy it.
Yeah.
And so thankfully she didn't think it was, but she was so good. So, yeah, so we wrote those two books based upon a lot of my experiences and then a bit of our childhood in Glasgow as well from Shari. So at the moment that's with one of the TV companies. Mm. So we're hoping that may become a TV series.
Oh, brilliant.
Which would be amazing, but we'll have fingers crossed on that. But no, I don't think it's closed. I mean, I think what's interesting, even if you just look at the Oscars, the amount of Brits who are nominated for Oscars, I think it's the best we've had in 10, 20 years. So they welcome talent here. Mm-hmm. I think they're very good. I mean, I think they've got an incredible pool of people here. I still think they get a little bit annoyed that, you know, Brits come out and do American accents and very few Americans do movies and do British accents.
Yeah.
It's quite funny. But no, I think they're very encouraging here. I still feel like a very welcoming country in terms of, you know, Brits.
Yeah.
You know, people do have that little thing. Oh my gosh. You know, the Americans love accents. And I don't think that is such a big thing. I think that's a bit of a fallacy, you know, that, you know, people think, oh, every time you go into a shop and people go, oh, just keep talking to me. And it's like, no, that doesn't really happen. Occasionally people go, I like your accent, but it's not, like a, you know, people, yeah. they've got a lot of Brits here. They've heard a lot of British accents. Yeah. Yeah. Watched yeah. a lot of TV. They've watched The Crown, you know, they yeah. know that we have an accent. But it's, yeah. it's, you know, and in the main, I find the people here great, fun, friendly. So mm, no, I still think that the gates are definitely open.
That's good to know.
Yeah, that is good to know, actually. And I think also as well with what we've seen, I suppose, over the last year, really, Ross, a couple of years with the gender gap with pay and actors getting different roles, or should they get a lead role? Do you think that's going to change as well? Do you think there's going to be more opportunities for, like you said, new actors coming through and just
yeah, I think, yeah. There, I think there always has been. I think the other problem that you have is that, you know, there will always be pay gaps, and it's not necessarily on gender. You know, it's like if I went to do a movie with Julia Roberts, who do you think is going to get the 25 million?
Exactly.
yeah.
So, you know, that's just the way it works sometimes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's a whole deep, deep discussion. But, you know, I think sometimes people do lose sight of the fact that, yeah, you know, if you've got Julia Roberts, she will get all that money because she will bring all those eyeballs to the movie.
Yeah.
And that's what she's getting paid for. She's not getting paid whether or not she's a woman or a man. She's getting paid because she can get those people to watch the movie.
Put bums on the seats.
Exactly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I also think as well, some of the conversations Becky and I have had, Ross, with different creatives and different people in the music industry we work with, sort of all agree really it's a great time to release music and to get content out there because of what's happened. People are crying out for great content, so we think that's a good thing really.
Oh, it's sensational. I mean, I have a friend of mine, David Stewart, who I've known since he literally was a baby, and he's a brilliantly talented young singer songwriter, and his dad Alan is another old pal, and his mum Jane and his sister Kate, and they've been big family friends of mine. And David would come out here and would write, and, you know, would just constantly write songs, and would write them in the bedroom at the house that he shared with his mum and dad and sister. And one of those songs just happened to be called Dynamite for BTS, and, you know, became the biggest selling single of last year, and you know, a huge worldwide hit. But the amazing thing is, you know, you're sitting at home in your bedroom and you've, you know, that's where you've recorded it. It's just phenomenal what you can do. It goes back to what we're saying about even now, that we can chat like this, you know, from from the Hollywood Hills to the Isle of Wight. I know.
It's amazing, really, isn't it?
It is. It's
the seven wonders of the Isle of Wight. Now you've even got me thinking of the seven wonders of the Isle of Wight.
I think I think Ross is going to be coming back.
Exactly. If my sister was like, she'd be going, ride where you walk. You know, Newport is old.
Oh, yeah, Sandown, Shanklin. Yeah, the little old village.
Lake where you walk.
Exactly.
And we have to ask as well, Ross, what do you think about the election as well with Biden? Do you think he'll be really good for the US now that he's president?
He's doing well. You know, I mean, it's a tough old time, and what a time to come in. I mean, you can look at it, I suppose, in both ways, that it's an incredibly tough time to come in, but a great time to come in because you can really do a lot. And his approval rating is sky high at the moment. I'm sure, as with all politicians, it won't it won't last that way.
Because,
you know, everyone does turn a little bit. But, you know, the country's still very divided. And, you know, I would make points when I was on the TV about it, when we covered, you know, I was in Florida. And I said, you know, you look at, you know, Biden got the most votes of any president ever in an election. But the person who got the second most votes of any president ever in an election was Donald Trump. So, you know, there's a lot of support still for the former president. And it's still very much a divided country. And obviously with COVID and the whole, you know, the whole debate over vaccines and who wants it and doesn't want it, not taking it and all the rest of it. It's a tough time. Who would be a politician?
Well, yeah.
Not me.
No way.
No.
And in regards to Trump as well, you know, how did you find him? I don't suppose you ever interviewed Trump, did you? Sit down with him at all?
No. The only president I've ever interviewed was Clinton.
Ah, yes.
Oh, wow.
Brilliant.
Lovely thing when you get a little sort of hand-typed note after the interview thanking you for it from the office of, you know, President Bill Clinton. It's quite a funny little thing. You go, oh.
That's yeah, exactly.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, that's pretty cool. That is really, really cool.
Yeah, definitely.
And I think we have touched on this quite a bit through our chat today, Ross, but what again would be the best resources that helped you on your way in the entertainment industry? I know we spoke about your mum and dad and your family. Mm. Is there anything else that, or other areas?
Tenacity.
Yeah.
Tenacity mm-hmm. is the word. Be tenacious. That's what will get you, and that's what will set you apart. You just got to be tenacious. Chase it all. Do everything. Just, you know, look down the side of your sofa. Is there any money there? No. It must be somewhere else. Yeah. It's outside. Get out there. Chase it. And be tenacious and just do anything and everything, because it will at some point help and it will all come round, and that's what to do. And also just be decent to, you know, your fellow human beings. That's, you know, I think that's a simple thing as well. Just be as decent as you can be.
Yeah,
that's really good advice. Yeah. So you can be, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, for any anyone starting out, you know, pursuing a career as an actor or presenter or journalist, you know, if you could give them one piece of advice, you know, in the world today, what would you give them?
Yeah, that's it. Just be tenacious. That's it. Just get out there. I can only speak from experience, and I think I was very tenacious. I think I still am. I still, you know, chase after things, because things don't come to you. You know, you can get to a point in your career where some things will come to you, but they only come to you because you've chased it in the past. And so you've got to keep chasing things. I don't think you ever want to sit back and think, yep, this is great, or I've done it, I've made it, or whatever. You know, and when I see all the people that I would think were like that, while we're in a situation where they could say that, they're definitely not. You know, they're still chasing it. You know, whether it be, you know, you look at someone like George Clooney, who, you know, didn't get success until, you know, a lot later in life. You know, it was really ER was the thing that took off for him. And that was, you know, he'd done so many pilots. I mean, he was well known here for doing pilots and not really, you know, working that much. You know, so he was late 30s into his 40s. And then, you know, now he's, you know, he's approaching 60, but, you know, it's more writing, it's more directing, it's more chasing stuff like that.
Yeah.
You know, and he will continue to have the most amazing career. But, you know, you would think, well, he's George Clooney. He can just say, you know, that's fine. I've done my time and I'll just, you know, ease up now. But no, he still keeps going. So I think, you know, all these people, you see these huge stars who are still chasing it. And I think it's brilliant. It's an inspiration.
It is. It's really inspiring, isn't it? You know, that they're still at the top of their game, but they're, like you say, they're just delving into different areas of the business, you know, and having that sort of fallback position, isn't it? You know?
Yeah, I think so. And I think also as well, when people say, oh, well, they were a success overnight, and not, you just highlighted, it can take 10, 20 years. I mean, one of the other
things,
takes time.
Podcast we had, Ross, was with a really good film producer, and he's a writer and he's an author. And one of the books that he co-wrote was The Meg.
Meg
never came out until 20 years. So it was 20 years in the making. And people didn't understand that. They just thought, well, Jason Statham rocked up, did the movie, and it was all good. And no, it wasn't. It was 20. And I didn't know that. When we actually spoke with Ken, I'll send you the podcast, Ross. He said it was 20 years in the making, from script to book to, you know, making the movie. And I'm like, wow.
Yeah.
I know. That's it.
Amazing.
It takes a long time to become an overnight success.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
It does. And if you could change anything in entertainment, Ross, what would it be? What would you want to change?
I think the way that people use and abuse social media, I think that would probably be the big thing that I'd want to change now.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that journalism is now relying a lot on social media, which is, I think, is very lazy. You know, it's like, you know, every day I'll read the British press and it'll be, you know, Twitter ablaze with, you know, and you go, well, no, there's three people on Twitter, and it, you know, could have been somebody that's in, you know, their family's basement, you know, I hate that, or, you know, whatever. And it's like, oh, you know, they make it into like a big story, and you think, well, it's just somebody put something on Twitter. It's just ridiculous. But it's just the way that the world is, and you just have to realize that's part of life now. But yeah, I think if I could change that, and I think for young people coming through, I think it's very, very hard for them. You know, that, you know, the pressures of social media and Instagram and photographs and, you know, this is my life, and, you know, people are kind of leading not their lives and trying to lead a kind of fake life to try and show to other people that their life's as good as the other person's fake life. And you just want to go, it's all fake.
Fake news, as I say.
Exactly. No, I couldn't agree more, really, to be honest with you. No. And I think that's partly why the industry sort of annoys me, where you think you've got to get out there and make it happen, and you're not going to walk into the big record company and get the $1 million deal, and you've got to, you know, work from the ground up and build your following, build your community. But it's a great time to put, you know, products, music, film, TV out there and just see what happens, rather than thinking, why haven't I got that deal? Well, you haven't. So it's as simple as that.
Yeah. And Ross, what do you like doing in your spare time outside of the entertainment industry? Have you got any hobbies or anything?
Yeah. Well, obviously, football's still a big hobby.
Yeah, of course.
It was obviously going to the theatre, going to the cinema. I do a bit of yoga a couple of times a week. Again, so lucky to be able to just go for lovely walks here as well. And that's it. And then, you know, you've got all the other usual stuff that takes up all the time. And I still love collecting memorabilia and silly things like that. And
okay.
It's pretty old active time out here. So yeah, I never ever have a moment when I think, oh, nothing to do.
Yeah. And you're normally obviously very busy, so you know, fitting it all in.
Yeah.
And this is an interesting one, Ross. We'd really like to get your take on this for a bit of fun. If you could choose three people in the world to have dinner with, who would it be with and why?
Okay. So the joke that I always do here is, who could you have, dead or alive? I'd always go Piers Morgan, dead. Piers knows I do that joke about him. He knows that I always do that joke.
Yeah.
George Clooney.
Yep.
Yeah.
Julia Roberts. Mm-hmm. And my sister.
Oh, wow.
And I think she would love it, and she'd have such a laugh. And George and Julia bounce off each other so well. And so maybe that makes me very shallow that I've just picked two of the biggest movie stars in the world and my sister. But I think that would be as I think about that in my head, it would just be a great fun evening. And that's why I love to laugh, and I laugh every day. I feel so fortunate that even when there's been sad things that have happened in my life, I've laughed every single day. You know, and that's I think it helps keeps you sane.
Yeah.
And just keeps you having a pretty decent perspective of life. So yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's a bad thing.
No, it's a great outlook, really.
Absolutely.
On life.
Absolutely. I think that's and again, we're not on the earth very long either, to be honest with this. Why not
A weekend.
Yeah, exactly.
You've got to make the most of it, haven't you?
Exactly. But the only thing is, Ross, just you got to change your team from Partick Thistle. I mean, come on. I mean, what's going on now?
That's it. Partick Thistle now. You've got to support the local team.
So when you get back to Scotland, you're going to have basically go and watch a game when you get a chance.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah. Guaranteed.
I think one of the funny things to say to you, when I've obviously was playing and went back to Scotland, and I had a couple of my uncles say to me, oh, we're going to take you to watch a Celtic game. And the first game I had was actually Celtic Aberdeen.
All right.
At Parkhead. And it was the biggest game, my first game I ever went to. I was, I think, 11, 12 years old.
Oh, wow.
And the thing that was scary but inspiring, Ross, two things. The first thing is, when we parked the car, there was a couple of young lads that come up and said, can we look after your car? And I didn't understand what that meant.
Yeah.
And my uncle said, I said, why did you give that nipper £10 or £20? Well, they look after our car. What happens if you don't? Well, your car's not there when you come back.
Everything's gone.
And the second thing was the noise, Ross. I couldn't believe the noise at 11 years old, watching a top game of football. It was deafening, absolutely deafening.
Yeah. It's incredible atmosphere in Scotland at games,
it's just unbelievable. But yeah, I think talking to you, those memories have sort of come back, really. Yeah. Really good.
It's good
really
looking good. Back, isn't it?
Yeah, it has.
Thank you, guys.
Yeah, thank you so much for being a guest on the Entertainment Engine today, Ross. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Thank you, Bex. Thank you, Pete. Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Really appreciate you coming on. And now it's that time again this week. It's over to Bex for the question of the day.
So let's get started for this week's question. In which city do Ross and Rachel get married in the TV series Friends? If you think you know the answer, then please get in touch with us. You can do this by sending in your answer via voice message right from your phone for free. And this can be done via www.anchor.fm/entertainmentengine by clicking on the message button, or you can email us your answer to podcast@seamlessentertainment.co.uk for a chance to be featured on our show.
Well, that's all for today's episode of The Entertainment Engine. And thanks for listening.
Join us again next week for more great guest interviews from the world of entertainment.
Plus, we will have our question of the day and music and movie facts for our listeners.
It would be great to have your feedback on the show, so please drop us a message at any time. We would love to hear from you.
So make sure you subscribe to the podcast on your favourite podcast platforms so you never miss an episode.
Thanks for listening to the show, and remember to all stay safe.
The Entertainment Engine.